Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
Good morning. Welcome. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. We have a packed show for you today. We'll be talking with our Washington insider, Dave Leventhal, in just a few seconds. After that, we'll be talking with Buffalo mayoral candidate Garnell Whitfield, as well as Avi Israel from Save the Michaels of the World. At 11, former Congressman Chris Collins will be joining us to talk about his run to get back into Congress. And at 11:30, Carl Calabrese. So, without further intro, let's go to our first guest. It is Buffalo's own, our Washington insider, Dave Leventhal, on this Father's Day. Dave, good morning. Happy Father's Day.
Good morning and a happy Father's Day right back at you, Joe Beamer.
Dave, lots going on. Let's go back to just yesterday. And before we get to the events in D.C., we do have to comment on the tragic situation in Minnesota, where everyone all over D.C. was commenting on the violence. But we still have a suspect at large as of this morning.
Yeah, active manhunt, and still the suspect is not in custody. This has led to the death of two people, including the former House Speaker in Minnesota, and in the very tragic shooting and in serious injuries sustained by another member of the legislature there. A horrible situation, need not say. And it's something that is absolutely dominated the state and speaks to a larger issue here that we've been grappling with for many years in the United States, which is when the rhetoric and the acrimony of politics turns into something that is even beyond toxic to violent. And there's extremism and strains of extremism, Joe, in this country that, of course, have led to this. And this has resulted in the shootings or attempted killings or the actual killings of more lawmakers than you could almost ever imagine. We're almost forgetting situations over the past several years where lawmakers have been gravely wounded or killed as a result of this very type of activity. So you ponder it, you wonder, well, what could be done otherwise? Is this just a need for turning the temperature down in this country? Is this a mental health issue? Is it all of the above? And at least this particular situation, it seems to be a directly targeted operation of one by a person who allegedly had a hit list and something that it seems like he's going after other people and other members of that legislature. Just absolutely chilling.
You know, Dave, you talk about that, you know, bringing the temperature down. We heard that so much a year ago after the shooting at the Trump rally where President Trump was shot and someone was killed. You and I talked about that the day after, after that happened. And, you know, you had that for like a week and then it's back to, everything was ramped up on both sides. What's the feeling in Washington after this tragic event?
Well, the feeling is shock, but also to not necessarily surprise because of everything that we just laid out. And look, 999 out of 1,000 people can be very angry at their political opponents, and they can, of course, be very upset about the way that this country may be going one way or another, and they will never act violently. But then you get that one person, and maybe it's 999 out of 1,000, 9,999 out of 10,000. But if you just have that one person who takes it to another level, then you have situations like the one that we have right now where it results in grave injuries or death. And do we want to live in a country like that? So, I think everyone just needs to look in the mirror and say, am I contributing to a culture of fear and a culture that in essence is promoting violence or something where I'm not seeing my political opponent as my mortal enemy? And everyone can play a role, at least in that respect, even if, of course, for themselves, they would never actually do something such as this.
Exactly. That going on yesterday, obviously, the manhunt still going on today. And in Washington, D.C., we had the parade for the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army. Mr. Dave Leventhal, you were there. Take us through it.
I sure was. Look, I've been to a lot of parades, including in Buffalo and throughout my young life. And I have been to Christmas parades and Halloween parades, Italian, Irish, gay, fascist, Falun Gong parades. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, many times covering them journalistically. But I have never quite seen a parade like this. And I think many people who attended would feel the same way for reasons that may seem positive and reasons that may seem negative. I spend much of the parade talking to people about, pardon me, why they were there. And sure, there were a lot of people who were there to support Donald Trump. It was his birthday. And of course, that was not lost on anyone that the Army's 250th anniversary was being celebrated on a day when Donald Trump was celebrating his 79th birthday. And so it was pretty difficult to unravel and decouple those two things happening at the same time. There were some shout outs to Donald Trump, wishing him a happy birthday during the proceedings. But I got to say, this was not a really wild, crazy Trump rally like affair. I spent much of the time at the front in the middle of the parade. It really wasn't that well populated. Sometimes there were gaps in the fence line along Connecticut or along Constitution Avenue between some of the streets leading to the front of the parade. It was definitely more animated and well populated toward the end of the route where Donald Trump's viewing stand was. But I would say that for most of the parade, it was pretty subdued, relatively quiet, and definitely respectful. There were really no, at least that I observed, instances of great acrimony or people fighting or any need for the many, many, many police officers and law enforcement officials who were there protecting the parade to jump in or otherwise break up situations that would have been untoward. But definitely was a spectacle, and many of those people who I did talk to were just there for the spectacle, not to get too Freudian on you, but for them, a parade was just a parade, and this was not anything that spoke to some deeper situation with Donald Trump or the militarization of our country or autocracy, which was many of the criticisms, of course, that were being levied at the president and his administration through the thousands of protests that were simultaneously going on the quote-unquote No King's Day protests that were happening, again, all over the country, and collectively were much more well attended than the parade itself here in D.C.
The No Kings protest, that was the next thing I wanted to bring up. As you said, going on all across the country, we had multiple demonstrations here in Western New York. Did those clash with the parade? Was the No Kings protest going on the same time in D.C.?
No, they really weren't. Now, there were some scattered protesters at the parade. Most of them were very quiet. They held signs. They walked around, but they were definitely in the minority. The No Kings protest, at least the organizers of that, didn't actually have any formal activity here in Washington, D.C. There were protests in and around the city, but not of the sort that you saw in Philadelphia or California or Texas or other places around the country. And part of that, at least the organizer said, was out of respect for the U.S. military. And their argument was, hey, we don't have any quarrel with the military. They should have their due. And the soldiers and the troops who were honored and were there en masse, literally thousands. I mean, it was quite a spectacle. Tanks rolling down Constitution Avenue, military personnel, all the vehicles, planes in the air, World War II vintage aircraft, helicopters. It was all very much a sight, and they didn't want to figuratively rain on the parade. And I should note, too, that even though storms were in the forecast, we only got a few sprinkles during the parade itself, so that the weather did hold off.
Now, overseas, Israel and Iran have been trading missile launches, and you know, this has been taken over. I said, Dave, all week it was either the protests in L.A. or the Middle East Israel-Iran conflict. I was staying up past midnight because the news networks were going late into the night. But how is this being viewed from Washington, D.C.?
Obviously, a frightening situation all around, and worries that this is going to spill out beyond the borders of Iran and Israel, and it's already plenty bad just given what it is at this moment. You wonder if there's going to be a third country or a fourth country that gets wrapped into this or chooses to get into it. That remains to be seen. No indications that that will be the case, but it was striking to see President Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and the secretaries of the Navy and the Army and other top military officials up there on the risers while bombs and missiles were flying between those two countries. Some of the detractors of the Trump administration said, well, shouldn't they be at work right now and dealing with this, just given the United States' indirect involvement in all of this? The United States, I should note, is providing at least defense cover for Israel to some extent, even if it's, of course, not getting involved in the offensive operations. But the pictures speak for themselves. Neighborhoods in Israel that have been partially leveled by missiles that are flying into its territory at the same time when Israel is just devastating different types of military and other types of logistical, like oil fields operations in Iran. It's really just a scary situation, not only, again, because of what it is, but because of the potential for further escalation that could very much imperil the entire Middle East.
And definitely something we're all keeping our eyes on. Back here at home, Dave, the big, beautiful bill. I think I went all week without hearing about the big, beautiful bill. Where does it stand?
Yeah, you know, when you have everything that we just discussed in motion in the way that it is, some things get pushed aside, which is just remarkable. The big, beautiful bill is still going forward, but you still, Joe, have several U.S. senators on the Republican side who are very concerned about what is in the big, beautiful bill, who would like to make it a little smaller than perhaps it is right now. And that's really the criticism from the right about this bill, is that it's too big and that it's going to be too costly. And that's people such as Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. It's people like Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. These are Trump supporters. These are people who are full on MAGA, and they just have concerns from a financial standpoint. And then you have other senators like Josh Hawley saying, well, this is going to be a real problem for us just in terms of the social impact even. I mean, one of the most conservative members of Congress. He also, too, has grave budget concerns. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Susan Collins from Maine. Why do I tick all their names off? Well, Republicans can only lose three votes here, okay, on the Republican side. And if they lose those three or more, then this suddenly gets imperiled. So there's going to have to be some wheeling and dealing done. There's going to have to be likely some compromise made. There's a deadline of going into next month. That is a self-imposed deadline for this bill. But also, too, after the Senate passes it, if they do, they got to go back to the House and they got to iron out the details. So, yes, even though we haven't had this in the headlines in the way that we did the week before, or the week before that, it is still very much there. It is not going away. It must be dealt with if Donald Trump wants to have his agenda funded. And he can sign all of the executive orders in the world, but if he doesn't have financial might behind them, then he's not going to get everything that he wants out of his agenda, not even close, which is why we're talking about this bill all the time and in the fashion that we are in the first place, because it really all comes down to money, Joe, and this is where the money is in this bill.
Did I see correctly, maybe I didn't, that there were people pushing back and that the tax on tips or the no tax on tips is in danger of being dropped?
It could be, and this is something that Donald Trump, he absolutely loves. The story, if you believe it to be true, it may or may not be apocryphal, is that this came to him in a conversation that he had with a waitress in Las Vegas while he was running for the presidency, and he sees this as a huge win, something that will be very attractive for people who are just, you know, workaday folks who work in restaurants or other jobs where tips are such a big deal and such a huge part of their income. And if you don't tax tips, well, that's a whole lot more money in their pockets. But at the same time, too, it's something that could be very, very costly to fund. And if you're not getting the tax revenue from that money flowing in to governments, then, well, okay, where are you going to find it? And that's some of the big questions. Do you take that from the social safety net? Do you take that from healthcare? Do you take it from here or there? So these are the types of questions that are being debated, and also the questions that some members of Congress on the Republican side, we know how the Democrats feel about this, but some Republicans feel are just a little too much for this bill, and that the more you cut in terms of money flowing in, the more you've got to cut from money that is flowing out, and people who might be benefiting greatly from that money that's flowing out from the government, including people who are sick or elderly or who have need help in this country. Their programs are not going to be funded in a way that could very, 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 very seriously harm them. And that's the concern.
You mentioned Senator Josh Hawley, and I actually talked about him on one of my opinion shows this week. Yeah. He is getting behind a bill that will raise the federal minimum wage, which is kind of stepping away from the policy usually associated with the Republicans.
He is, and this is something that's not particularly popular among Republicans outside of Josh Hawley, something that Democrats have been agitating for a little while, but haven't really done anything on when they've had their chance in power, so that's very much worth noting. But the federal minimum wage has basically stayed the same that it's been for a generation, $7.25. And even though many states such as New York and here in D.C., the federal minimum wage is no reflection of the actual minimum wage that can be locally changed and increased. Sometimes it's double what it is at the federal level. There are still some major large states and other states across the country that do adhere to that federal minimum wage. So, you know, nobody thinks that making $7 an hour roughly is going to allow you to pay your bills in this day and age. And people who are freaking out about inflation and all of that, well, you know, your money is worth about half of what it is, if a dollar, than it would have been a generation ago. So that $7.25 doesn't go nearly as far as it used to when that level was set. So that's kind of Josh Hawley's argument, is that, look, we've got to adhere to reality here and help people who are just simply not able to make ends meet. It's not a living wage. It's a poverty wage. And I paraphrase him. And that's a bit of an argument that he's pushing it right now. Whether anyone listens to him is another matter, but he's definitely using his bully pulpit to raise that issue among others.
Dave, I'm sure I've asked you this question, and I know I'll ask you again before November, but obviously it's an odd year election, a lot of local elections going on. Buffalo has an election where, for the first time since my junior year in high school, Byron Brown won't appear on the ballot. Actually, whatever the election before that was, because he was elected my junior year of high school. So we know that's the big deal here in Buffalo. But nationwide, is there any elections that people in Washington are keeping an eye on?
Yeah, one and one very close by, which is the governor of Virginia. And this is something where the lieutenant governor, Winsome Earl Sears, who's a Republican, and Abigail Spanberger, former congresswoman, who is the Democrat, are running in what we expect to be one of the most high profile races in the country. And Virginia, why is it worth looking at Virginia? Well, Virginia is a legit purple state. It leans maybe a little bit more blue than red, but the current governor of Virginia is a Democrat. The two U.S. senators are Republicans. It's a state that did go Democrat in the presidential election, but could have very well gone Republican. And so for that reason, it is considered very much to be a bellwether state where the result has larger, deeper, more far-reaching implications than just the individual race itself. So keep an eye on that one. Abigail Spanberger, if you believe the polls, is leading at this point, but I expect that it's going to be number one, very competitive, and number two, very expensive, where there is going to be not only national interest just from a curiosity standpoint, but most definitely from a financial standpoint.
Interesting, interesting. And that was the election that Glenn Youngkin kind of won by taking the opposite approach when it came to schools against Terry McAuliffe, correct?
Absolutely. And he's been the governor, and he can't serve because in Virginia, you can't serve terms back to back. You have to take basically a break. And if you want to run again, you can do that. So it's a little bit of a twist in the way that governors can serve in that state versus New York and many others where you can serve for as long as you want. So you oftentimes get a lot of action that is going on in Virginia at the governor's level as opposed to many other states in the country.
I've said, Dave, I think that's what they should do with president. I think the president should have to do a term, and if you want to get back, you have to sit a term out so you're not campaigning the entire time you're in the White House.
And a lot of states, they have considered all sorts of different ways. My first job at Syracuse University was covering the state of New Hampshire, where they have gubernatorial elections every 2 years, not every 4 years. You can serve forever, but you got to run basically on a two-year schedule. So that's something where you constantly have to make sure that you are being very responsive to the people. A lot of people would argue too responsive, but yeah, you know, lots of different philosophies for how things should go at the governor's level.
All right, Dave, final question for you. Chris Collins, we're going to be hearing from him at 11 o'clock. He was obviously the congressman here in NY27, which doesn't exist anymore. He was the first member of Congress to endorse Donald Trump. It all came crashing down, as he writes about in his new book. He is looking to go back to Congress, though this time in Florida 19. What are your thoughts on Chris Collins trying to head back to Congress?
Well, yeah, hey, plenty of Buffalonians and Western New Yorkers who have a part-time home in Florida, so at least it doesn't seem too out of left field. He's not running for Congress in Idaho or Colorado or something, but I mean, why not for him? He's on his redemption tour. He served 2 months in federal prison until Donald Trump pardoned him and basically let him off the hook, and he's trying to make his comeback here. So despite the fact that he said at the time that, look, I screwed up, I say uncle, I broke the law, he's looking to come back. And who better than to draw inspiration from on a political comeback tour of this sort than the president himself? You know, this is an age when you can be convicted of 34 felony counts and become president of the United States. So Chris Collins, he's got a compelling story to tell, he believes, and it may be attractive in a race where it could be pretty there for him to take if he runs a good campaign. So we'll see ultimately what happens, there are definitely a few examples of folks who have served in two different states and different portions of the government. I think of Mitt Romney, most prominently, the governor of Massachusetts, and then a senator from Utah. So this is not without precedent, and it definitely can happen.
That would have been a good one to remember when I did the interview, Dave. Hey, always appreciate your time, Dave Leventhal, especially on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
And that is Dave Leventhal. You hear him every Tuesday morning with Susan and Brian at 6:50 here on News Radio 930 WBEN. When we come back, we'll be talking with Buffalo mayoral candidate Garnell Whitfield. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids to a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Welcome back. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Early voting in the primaries started yesterday here in Western New York and in the city of Buffalo. The Democratic primary for mayor of Buffalo, all eyes are on that race. And one of the men running for mayor of Buffalo is Garnell Whitfield. We talked to him on Friday. Garnell, thank you so much for calling in.
How are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Garnell. How's the campaign? We're a day away from early voting. How are things on the campaign trail?
Oh, we're working very hard, very excited about the campaign, very excited about the election and excited about the early voting start. So we're full throttle, knocking on doors and talking to our constituents and looking forward to a successful campaign.
If you don't mind, I have a question from back the debate a few nights ago. Is that okay?
That's fine.
A few nights ago, the debate, obviously the budget is the number one thing. And, you know, just like this race so far has just been focused on, you know, the two candidates, the city mayor and the state senator. I want to give you an opportunity to, you know, put out there, what would a Garnell Whitfield budget look like with the problems facing the city of Buffalo?
Well, it would look like, first of all, understanding why we're in the deficit. I don't think anybody's talking about that. We don't have a full understanding of how we got here. what's going on with this. Obviously, nobody wants to talk about that because there's some culpability there. All of these people are electeds who were here all along. They have to have some accountability for where we are. And so that's the first thing I think we need to do. We have to have an audit. We have to bring people to the table. I would be not averse to bringing whomever, any of the other candidates, or whoever we need to be at the table, certainly even the Buffalo Fiscal Authority, whoever we need to be at the table to come up with a budget that makes sense, that's based on facts, that is honest, that is transparent, and one that we can all get behind. Whoever the mayor is ought to have that as a blueprint to work off of.
Garnell, tomorrow is there's the No Kings protest coast to coast, and I know this falls right on the first day of early voting. Your thoughts on the movement, and will you be out there tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow is also Juneteenth, so I will be out there for Juneteenth, which is not any different from No Kings protests that are going on. So we will be celebrating both of those things, but tomorrow is Juneteenth. I will be in the parade. We'll be walking. We'll be celebrating in our community. Obviously, you know that is a big, big time, a big day for us, for blacks in America, talking about freedom and that. But it's not indifferent from what we're talking about, No Kings protests. So we will be doing both of those things tomorrow. Absolutely.
Your thoughts on, obviously, the big thing talked about nationwide is illegal immigration. We see what's going on in Los Angeles. Mayor Garnell Whitfield, what is your stance on sanctuary cities and the city's process when dealing with people who are undocumented, illegal, however you want to categorize them?
Well, first of all, we want to respect everybody's rights. We believe that everybody has a right to due process, to be respected, to be treated with dignity, no matter what their status is. And that's what we would do as a city. At my administration, we would certainly not be cooperative with ICE and the tactics they're using now. I believe that Buffalo is a sanctuary city. It should be a sanctuary city. We're on an international border, and we ought to start acting like we're an international city. We should be welcoming people to our shores, to our city. I think that that's the right thing to do. We will be protective of all persons' rights within our community.
So Kathy Hochul was talking about this in Washington yesterday, and I just want your perspective. A sanctuary city, but if we're talking about a violent criminal who is here illegally, will the city of Buffalo then work with ICE?
Listen, the city of Buffalo is going to follow the law. We're going to follow the law. If we have violent criminals, we're not supportive of violent criminals. But even they, in a democratic system in America, have due process, and they should get that. And so they shouldn't be treated any different than anybody else. They're human beings, and whatever their issues are, we will deal with them accordingly. So it's not a matter of cooperating with ICE. It's a matter of following the law, and that's not what ICE is necessarily doing.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, they're breaking the laws. They're stretching the law. They're doing things. They're losing in the courts every day. You see what just happened in Los Angeles with the deployment of the National Guard. So they're bending the law. They're not following the law. They should follow the law, do things according to the law, and be respectful of that in these communities. And so if they do that, then we have to follow the law also. So we're not here to help them, but we're going to follow the law. We're going to protect the rights of these citizens within this community.
I have another question about a big topic that's now been talked about for 2 years in the city of Buffalo, and that is the 33. Now, I went to college on the 33. I took that road every day, that and the 198. But obviously now you've got a plan to tunnel a portion of it. There's another plan to turn the 198 into a complete parkway. Mayor Garnett Whitfield, what project would you be supporting?
I'm supporting the right project. There's only one right project, and that is to fill it in. If we know the 33 was put in, as was across America, through communities of color, to destroy those communities, to make it convenient for people to transverse from in and out of the city without really, touching the city, without really having interaction in the city, we know that that's a fact. We know that that's been done across America. Then what would make it right today to continue that? What would make it right? I don't know. You got Frederick Law Olmsted Parkway, one of the best designed cities in America, if not the world. They destroyed that. They destroyed the community. They destroyed the lives of people in that community. They destroyed they stole their generational wealth. They stole their health. All of these things happened because of the 33. Not only that, but the other arterials that were once used to transverse for people to get in and out of Buffalo also died a slow death when they put the 33 in. And so that's had a larger impact than just that community. And so I believe that filling it in, closing it, restoring the parkway, restoring the lives of people in that community is a start to restoration of the East Side. There's over $1 billion sitting there. Money's in the bank for this project. If you take half of it to fill it in, you still have half of it to restore that community and to build that community out. That is the quickest and most efficient way to begin the restoration of the East Side of Buffalo. And that's what I support.
I want to go down the 33, back to downtown, and I know this probably should have been off the budget question, but I wouldn't say I'm the best interviewer. Downtown Buffalo, obviously, is going through it. You know, 25,000-30,000 less people a week going there for work. What would you propose? What would you like to see done to bring downtown Buffalo back and make that an economic center in Western New York?
Well, listen, I don't understand why this is such a million-dollar question. We have electeds who watched silently as they rebuilt a stadium in Orchard Park. Nobody advocated for that stadium to come to Buffalo. That would have transformed the city. Any of these projects, the 33, the stadium, UB going out to Amherst, the convention center in the middle of nowhere instead of the waterfront. All of these things represent a failure of leadership in our community, and that's my position. I believe that we need leadership who will speak truth to power, whether in fact the 33 is our road or not. The mayor has an obligation to do what is best for this community, and that has not been done, and it's still not being done. You hear none of the candidates saying that. The stadium issue, they were silent on. How could you possibly sit and watch that? Look at the other cities across this country where stadiums and roadways have been built, conducive to the needs of that community in the downtown area, whatever. Why are we the downtown area was killed by these people. It didn't happen organically because of COVID. They've made decisions generationally that have killed downtown. Light rail rapid transit was never expanded to the other communities that would have facilitated transportation. So all of these decisions have been made. The politicians that are running for mayor are a part of it. I think we need new leadership.
I 100% agree with you on the rapid transit. I cannot believe, you look at the plans of what it was supposed to be when it was first proposed. And I think it would have been so good for not only the city of Buffalo, for Western New York.
Absolutely. So would the stadium. So would the stadium downtown. Okay. I mean, let's not leave that out. So would UB downtown. All of these things are connected. Disparate things. They're all connected. We always look at these things in a silo. And that's why our growth has been stunted. That's why our city looks like it does. Because we never had leadership that thinks big. We're on an international border, for crying out loud. I mean, this is outrageous that we sit here and squandering these opportunities one after the other and wonder why our downtown or our neighborhoods look the way they do. It's because of a lack of leadership. That's what it is.
Garnell, I have one more question for you, and this is something that came up last week when I talked with Mayor Chris Scanlon and Councilmember Rashid Wyatt, and that is the forum. Now, I know you never want to look back, right? It's looking forward, but this forum that was done at the end of 24 and 25 to pick the endorsed mayoral candidate, do you think that was 100% on the up and up?
Listen, just like everything else in this city, it's controlled by the people behind the scenes. Look at the people behind these candidates, and you will know why things are the way they are. Whether we're talking about the forum, whether we're talking about the condition of this city, no matter what we're talking about, it is the people behind the candidates. Where do you think they got all of this money from? Those are the people that they're working for. Those are the people that they're working for every day. It is not the residents of this community. And until we get somebody in there that is unencumbered, and with these favors or with these promises or whatever they are, until we get people in office who are independent and are willing to speak truth to power and unafraid and do not need the support of these people financially, then we're not going to change in the city of Buffalo, period. I am that person.
Garnell Whitfield running for mayor of Buffalo. Early voting starts tomorrow. Garnell, before I let you go, anything you wanted to address that I didn't bring up?
No, I thank you for this opportunity again. We're swimming upstream here. Nobody intended us to be here. We're here. Our family, we got a few volunteers. We're working very hard. I believe we have the trust and the support of the people in this community, and that's what we're relying on. Not big dollar donations, not promises of anything else. All we do is working for the people. We're fighting and delivering for the people. And that's all. That's our agenda.
Hey, Garnell, I am so thankful for you calling in and giving me some time this afternoon. And we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thank you. Thank you.
And that is Buffalo mayoral candidate Garnell Whitfield. When we come back, we'll be talking with Avi Israel from Save the Michaels of the World. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Welcome back. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Avi Israel of Save the Michaels of the World issued a letter to government officials in Albany. He called in Friday to talk about that letter and his concerns when it comes to funding. Now, your concern is with the governor and funds being allocated?
Well, what I did is send a letter. We sent a letter to just about every elected official, every news outlet, to just let them know what's going on with the state of New York. We have been working with the same amount of money, $425,000 for the last 7 years. And last year alone, we got over 52,000 calls and served close to 30,000 people in an in-and-out fashion. Well, what I mean is people will come to group. We will transport people to treatment. We will find people a place to go to treatment. We will educate parents. We will educate the public and so forth. We have become a one-stop shop. Everybody knows that the cost of living in this country has gone up. The cost for workforce has gone up, where at one time we could pay $32,000 to $35,000 for a coach. We are now paying $45,000 to $50,000 for a coach. Rent has gone up. Utilities have gone up. We have asked this governor, we have asked OASIS, which is the agency that deals with addiction, for an increase in our budget because we don't charge anything for anybody that comes in to Save the Michaels. And the word is always no. Well, tell that to the over 30,000 people that we've helped. And tell that to all the families that have come in to Save the Michaels. You know, people don't look, and especially government, don't look at addiction as a serious disease. It kills faster than cancer. It kills faster than a heart attack. It is a brain disease. And unfortunately, 4 out of 5 homes in this country are affected by some sort of addiction. And to this governor, who promised a transparent government, it's not there. You know, we got over $500 million from opiate settlement fund. We're still looking to see what happened at $300 million. And I used to sit on the board, and we can't find it. And I did ask at what time the lady by the name of Peggy Oshai, who runs the Office of Management and Budget, could you please tell me if the governor is using opiate settlement money to supplant her budget? And her answer was, I don't know. Well, I don't know means yes to me. And to get back to our situation with the continuous of saying no all the time, we had to lay off 12 people last week. And there's a change in the way the state dispersed the money. It went from a monthly invoicing to a quarterly invoicing. So I'll give you an example. We have a recovery center and a drop-in center for the homeless community in the city of Lockport. We get $500,000 for that place. We get $125,000 for the quarter. We get over 10,000 people that come in there for a month. And yet it's not that important to this governor. It's not that important to OASIS, who manages. There's a homeless community in Western New York that nobody cares about. And what I mean by nobody, I mean our government. Politician would rather pave Delaware Avenue five times than take care of people who are homeless in this country. And what I mean by that is this, and I'm going to say it, and I'm not anti-immigrant, and I'm not anti-refugees, but do it in a legal way. And the fact that you tell me that there's no money for veterans, there's no money for American-born people, and yet somebody that comes from another country can get a hotel room, can get Medicaid right off the bat, can get food, can get whatever it is that they want, yet our people can starve. And they come to Save the Michaels, and we live on donations. We give them everything from clothes to food, connect them to transportation, to anything that they need to make sure that their life gets back into order. And I'm talking about families, but they cannot get the hotel room. They cannot get the free food. They cannot get the medical that they need, the transportation to whatever it is that they need to go to. And that's really disturbing because, you know, we need to start taking care of our own, and we're not doing that.
Avi, you mentioned funding that was given by, at the time, New York State Senator Tim Kennedy. When he went to Congress,
yes,
that money disappeared. Is there not the communication with the person who took his seat?
Well, she was not sitting there. There was an empty seat, April Baskin. But I can tell you this. Senator Sean Ryan was sitting in the room when that money was discussed. And Sean Ryan never said a word about helping. Wait a minute, that money belongs to Save the Michael. So that money got taken away. I don't know what happened to it. It could have gone into the general fund. It could have gone into Kathy Hochul's slush fund. That money always helped us make ends meet. And unfortunately, we're hurting this year.
Now, you sent this letter on the 9th. When do you think you'll hear back from the officials?
I doubt that I'll ever hear anything from Kathy Hochul or from OASIS. I have sent dozens of emails and letters to Kathy Hochul. Never got an answer back, and which is really disturbing because when she was the lieutenant governor, she was visiting Save the Michaels on a monthly basis. Now she doesn't know us. The same thing with the agency that runs addiction, OASIS. You can contact them. This commissioner who came to was appointed by Governor Hochul, is really came from a big organization in New York City, from a hospital organization from New York City. She is not experienced with what's going on the street itself. At one time, I asked that commissioner, you know, do you have anybody with a lived experience on your staff? And she goes, I don't know what you mean. I mean, does anybody on your staff has a lived experience? Did they go through addiction? And the answer was that it's not required. Of course, it's not required, but it helps. Save the Michaels staff is 90% people with lived experience. People who know what the people who's the patients who are coming in are going through. And that's the reason we are always busy and help and helping a lot of people. I'll give you another example. There was an RFP for an outreach grant. What I mean by that is it was syringe exchange, test strips, and helping people get into treatment. There were two awards for Western New York. And we applied for one and we were going to partner with Evergreen. And so both of us were going to get the awards. We found out that we didn't get the awards. So we asked for a reason why. And we were told earlier this week that the reason we didn't get the award because the state has changed from two award to one award. And that was all done in the middle of a bidding, in the middle of applying for a grant without any notification. Our award that was supposed to get the second award that was supposed to come to Western New York went to New York City. And this is what's happening all the time. New York City gets whatever they want, and anything west of the Hudson River does not count, which really upsets me many times. And what I'm thinking is that what Kathy Hochul is doing is really buying votes.
It's an election year, Avi.
Well, you know what? Joe, we pay taxes over here.
Yeah.
We vote over here. We live a pretty honest life. We don't cheat. There's no, I'm not going to say that there's no corruption, but nothing compared to what goes on downstate.
No, that's true. Avi, we're up against the break, Matt, but thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for all the great work you do. SaveTheMichaels.org to catch up with Avi, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Thank you so much.
And that was Avi Israel of Save the Michaels of the World. When we come back, we'll be talking with former Congressman Chris Collins. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Welcome back. Hour number two on Hardline this Father's Day. Hope everyone's having a great Father's Day. Earlier this week, I talked with former Congressman Chris Collins. He has a new book coming out, and he's running for Congress, this time in Florida. We talked to him on Wednesday. Here's how that sounded. Former Congressman of, what was it then, NY27, Chris Collins joining the show. Congressman, good morning.
Yes, Joe. Yeah, that's back when New York had 27 members, which they don't have anymore. Oh, boy, what a switch. You realize how Florida keeps gaining seats every New York keeps losing seats every 10 years. What a difference between the trajectory of New York versus Florida. Wow.
For sure, for sure.
I'm now a resident of Florida.
For sure. And, Chris, I want to talk about your book and your run in Florida. But first, I got to ask you, obviously you're living down in Florida now, but are you paying attention to Erie County politics as the former county executive? And anything from those observations?
I have not been paying attention to Erie County.
No, lucky you.
I've moved on.
Well, speaking of moving on, you are now in Florida and looking into, or are you ready to make it official running for U.S. State Congress again?
I have made it official. I'm in Marco Island, Florida. That's Marco, Naples, Southwest Florida. I did a few months back officially announce that I am going to be running for Congress next year. to fill the open seat that Byron Donalds is vacating, as he's going to be running for governor of Florida. And so I, you know, just thought the timing was right. Trump's back in office. I'd like to go back and be his sidekick, if you will, for the last 2 years of this current term. And so yeah, I've got my website up, collinsfl19.com, because it's district number 19. I've got a, you know, the traditional palm card, if you will, that I've got my team back together. Chris Grant, who many people realize was my chief of staff, both as county executive and for my first few years in Congress, now has his own political consulting company called Big Dog Strategies, and he's going to be my campaign consultant. he actually ran the MAGA super PAC, the $300 million super PAC that's been credited with Trump's win, you know, a year ago. Chris Grant was the person doing that, so I've got the best of the best that will be coordinating my campaign to return to Congress representing Florida District 19 next year.
So, Chris, and, you know, you're talking about an area where there's a, you put a staff together of some former Western New Yorkers. There's a lot of former Western New Yorkers living in Florida. You're making this run and releasing a book, My Remarkable Life, talking about your life to this point, Congressman. And I want to go back to 2015. You were the first member of Congress to endorse Donald Trump. What is it that you saw in 2015?
Yeah, it was actually February 24th of 2016 when I officially endorsed him. And, you know, we didn't know the words at that point, but the concept of making America great again resonated with me. I mean, he was a private sector guy, as I am. And, you know, when I ran for county executive, my slogan was elect a chief executive, not a chief politician. And that certainly described Donald Trump in 2016 running for president at that point against 12 or 14 other candidates. And, you know, I understood his concept of being private sector, not a career politician. And his campaign very much overlapped my campaign in 27 to become county executive, and also my campaign in 2012 to replace Kathy Hochul as the member of Congress for New York 27. So it was very fortuitous, as it turns out. But I certainly got to know him well, and I was his chief spokesman for a period of time as a member of Congress. And ultimately, he did appoint me to be the congressional liaison to Congress. I spent a lot of time in the White House and had the opportunity to fly on Air Force One and so forth. And when my world cratered and crumbled, and, you know, it's in my book, I ended up in federal prison. He pardoned me on December 22nd after 10 weeks, you know, of hell. And again, that's in my book. But so, yeah, he and I go back a long time, and I'm counting on his endorsement. I can't take it for granted, but have some confidence I can have that for my election campaign here August 18th of next year.
Chris, you talk about in your book, you know, as you said, your road in Congress ended in federal prison. You know, you look back on that moment. We all remember it here. Obviously, working at the radio station, we remember covering it. You look back. Do you have remorse? Was there anything you would have done differently back then?
The only thing I would have done differently, I would not have called my son, you know, in a 5-minute phone call I did, as most people realize, from the at the White House picnic in July of 2017. But as I say in my book, you know, there was a trading halt on the stock. All the other board members called their families. What no one anticipated was that NASDAQ wouldn't honor the trading halt that was issued in Australia where the company was traded. So I did what I did. I was persecuted, prosecuted, and railroaded by the Department of Justice, which is what they're known for. So once all of that happened, I had to do what I could to protect my son. The U.S. Attorney Jeff Berman actually wrote a book that I am quoting in my book, how he kind of brags that the timing of my indictment was intentional to influence the election in 2018. And as people know, I did win. I beat Nate McMurray in an election with 11 felonies hanging over my head, allegations. And my life was turned upside down by what I refer to as the Department of Injustice. And, the rogue behavior of the Southern District of New York. But that is what it is. Sometimes life does what it does. And I've lived through it. And to use the frame, I'm back. I intend to, I'll be running next year for sure. And I intend to win and go back to Congress as the first member in over 50 years to represent two different states in the House of Representatives. So.
You mentioned running for Florida governor. You were pardoned in 2020. You've lived in Florida since being released.
I've been living in Florida since my world crumbled on October 1st of 2019 when I was pretty much forced into a guilty plea. So that was October 1st of 2019 is when I actually became a full time Florida resident. So as time flies, here we are, 6 years later. And I've been full time here. And as we know, Florida is a growing state, and there's a whole lot of folks here who are refugees from Michigan and Wisconsin and Illinois and Ohio and Minnesota. And so, this district welcomes someone like me that hasn't spent my whole life in Florida, but there's a whole lot of folks that are transplants, and I think I have been very well received as I'm traveling through the two counties that I will represent, Collier County, which is known for being Naples, and Marco Island, and Lee County, which is known for Fort Myers and Cape Coral.
Cape Coral, I was just there a few weeks ago, Congressman. Now, you were Congressman NY27, as we said, you're running for Florida 19. I'm sure one of the questions you're going to get is, what are some of the similarities and some of the differences in the district you used to represent and this district that you are looking to represent?
Well, the good news to an extent is both are very Republican. I mean, I had the most Republican district in New York 27, with all the what was eight counties in the rural areas and all the farmers. And likewise here, Florida 19 is probably the most conservative Republican district in all of Florida. So those are the similarities. The differences are, here, Florida is just, it's got a totally different economy. It's tourism based. It's not heavy manufacturing. It's, and as such, it's a different demographic, but very Republican. They're solidly behind Trump. It's going to be very easy for my background to resonate very well in this district.
And, obviously you're campaigning now. The primary will be in 2026, but I'm sure you're keeping your eyes on what's going on nationwide. The riots in L.A., the questions of the illegal immigration that happened during the Biden administration. President Trump, he ran on that. But you're seeing a lot of pushback from people on the other side of the aisle to ICE doing, again, what the president said he was going to do when he was elected.
Oh, I mean, it's very upsetting just from if we talk about the United States of America and you see the positioning of the Democrats who hate everything about Trump, and basically they're a bunch of bold-faced liars. I mean, just yesterday, Nancy Pelosi saying, yeah, there's no violence in Los Angeles. It's like, what? All of the time they were saying that Joe Biden was at the top of his game. And people say, well, no, I'm watching him. He's stumbling. He doesn't know who people are. People realize the Democrats are a party not aligned with basic American values, men and women sports and the like. They're rudderless. No one knows who's even their spokespeople anymore. You know, down here we can just ignore them from a political standpoint because they don't truly exist. But nationwide, we need to get our country back together. Donald Trump's doing that, but the noise on the left is embarrassing. Frankly, it should be for them because people can watch TV and see what they're seeing. And those riots in LA are anything but peaceful. My God. But we'll see what happens. Right now, they're not on the comeback trail. That's for sure.
We are talking with former Congressman Chris Collins, who is looking to be congressman again. You know, Chris, in the first hour, I talked with Erie County GOP Chairman Michael Crocker. And, you know, I pointed to Florida and what Ron DeSantis did in one term, went from winning from less than 1% to, I mean, Florida now a pretty red state. I'm not going to say fantasy wise that New York State could ever become as solidly red as Florida. But, you know, could we get a governor that could make New York purple? What do you think it is about Ron DeSantis's time as governor that has made Florida go from a swing state to a reliably red state, not just in the presidential election, but in the state elections?
Well, people may be skeptics. I mean, I actually served in Congress with Ron, so I do know him very well. It's the results that matter. And so since he's been governor, and it's been 7 years, we have term limits in Florida. I mean, there's another big difference. New York doesn't have term limits on anything. Florida has term limits on everything, with the exception of Congress, which are federal. But it was the results. It was his attention to things that matter, whether it's, you know, again, we're a state with no income taxes. We have a tourism-based economy. There's still a lot of agriculture here in Florida. It was him paying attention to details, doing the things that matter to people to continue our growth. And just by the fact that we keep adding congressional seats that New York keeps losing is a sign of success, and people will reward success. You know, he spoke to the values of the folks in Florida, and, you know, his results and the team he put together, much like a lot of things I did in Erie County when I was county executive, resonated, and as a result, too, with our continued growth in population, we are now solidly red. And, you know, whether it's Byron Donalds, who currently is the congressman from Florida 19, he's been endorsed by President Trump to become our next governor, and I'm certainly supporting Byron. I think it'll be, again, a Republican governor in the next election here.
All right. Well, I'm hoping, Chris, that we could start seeing that here in New York as well. I'm hoping the new governor will be a Republican, if it's Elise Stefanik, and they can take a page out of the Ron DeSantis book.
Well, as New York continues to crumble, if you recall, the way I was elected county executive was 63% of the vote in Erie County, which was 2-1 Democrat. It's because the county was effectively bankrupt. We had the hard control board. Our roads were a mess. The beaches were closed. And they said, here's a guy who can change it. I don't care if he's a Republican or what. He's got the resume to do it, much like I would talk about Elise Stefanik, which is a good friend who looks to be someone who may run for governor. And when New York's in the disarray that it is, financially and otherwise, people just say, I want the state to turn the corner, and the current party, the Democrat Party, isn't capable of doing it. I want somebody who can go back to basic common sense, you know, again, whether it's women's sports or so forth. And so I think New York is ripe for a Republican to come in and turn around the mess that Kathy Hochul has created.
Chris, you ever think back, you know, sometimes in the moment you think it's something bad and then it turns into, well, you know, I got to run for Congress and be in Congress. You ever look back at losing the Mark Poloncarz and think how different life would be if you won that election?
Oh, I mean, yeah, there's no question about it. Amongst other things, Kathy Hochul would not be governor. She would still be in Congress. That would have been her lifetime career. So the irony is, yes, I sometimes call it serendipity. The fact that I lost the county executive race and dusted myself off and said, by God, I'm going to take on Kathy Hochul in New York 27 and it was a neck and neck race. Let's face it. She spent $8+ million attacking me in that election in 2012, and I won by like 1 point. But I did, and you know that's how she ended up getting selected to be lieutenant governor, and then, as we all know, is now our current governor of New York. None of that would have happened had I not lost to Mark Poloncarz in 2011 in my election. As I said, they hired a Republican private sector chief executive to fix the county, and then they went back with a 2-to-1 Democrat registration and brought in a Democrat to keep things muddling along.
Well, the ironic thing is the Kathy Hochul that you defeated wouldn't recognize the Kathy Hochul today.
No, I pointed out to people, believe this or not, it's true, she was endorsed by the NRA. I mean, she is such a hypocrite, you can't even begin. She was endorsed by the NRA in her race against me because she had a 100% pro-gun voting record. When she was the county clerk, she said if an illegal immigrant came in to get a driver's license, she'd call the police and have them arrested. She was a hypocrite who understood she was elected to Congress in a very Republican district. And, so she said what she needed to say to beat Jane Corwin in the special election when she was elected in 2011. And her true colors have come out, as she's now kowtowing to the New York City liberals and is, frankly, the most liberal Democrat governor, even more so than Newsom in California. But look what she's done to New York. You know, we again, keep losing population. The finances are a disaster. But, yeah, it's serendipity, and it's part of life's journey that you could say I created Kathy Hochul by defeating her in 2012, which turned out she became lieutenant governor and then governor. So that's part of life's twists and turns.
It is, and you can read all about it. That is former Congressman Chris Collins. His book, My Remarkable Life, released December 16th of this year, and he's running for Congress in Florida 19.
Yes, that's right. That's what it is, Joe. It sure is.
Well, Chris, appreciate you joining us, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call.
And again, that was former Congressman Chris Collins on his upcoming book and his run for Congress in Florida 19. When we come back, one final segment, we'll talk with Carl Calabrese. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Welcome back. Final segment of Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. And we talk with Carl Calabrese about all the happenings around Western New York, New York, and the country and the world. As we do on every Friday, Carl Calabrese is here. Carl, happy Friday.
Same to you, Joe. This is 2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row, Carl, and I'm honored to be here. And we've got to start on Capitol Hill yesterday. Elise Stefanik and Governor Kathy Hochul. Your thoughts on how that all broke down? And I mean, does Elise Stefanik have a chance if this becomes the race in 26?
Oh, sure, she's got a chance. And I tell you, I thought she made mincemeat of Kathy Hochul yesterday at that hearing. I mean, to ask her those questions about illegal immigrants and the horrible, horrendous crimes they committed. And, you know, the governor had no clue who they were. I mean, it was embarrassing. I've said for a long time, Joe, I think this governor is way out of her weight class in this position. And yesterday's hearing certainly showed that. It also showed how combative Elise Stefanik is, and that's exactly the kind of attitude and temperament you need if you're going to run against an entrenched incumbent in a very blue state of New York. But boy, she certainly is feisty, and I said to my wife, I'd love to see these two have a stand-up hour and a half debate during a gubernatorial race. So, you know, we'll see. Lee Zeldin came very, very close to beating Kathy Hochul based on the crime issue. If that election season had gone another week or so, he may very well have pulled it out because all the trends were moving in his direction. Now, we don't know what the predominant issue is going to be in the next gubernatorial election. Will it be crime? Maybe. Illegal immigration? Maybe. Maybe all of the above. But she is certainly the kind of standard bearer a out-of-party power wants to have in an election. I think she's shown now twice. She showed it with the very tough questioning of the presidents of, what was it, Yale, Harvard, and I think it was Pittsburgh, I think, that led to, the resignations of at least two out of the three, maybe all three. Very tough questioner, and we saw it again yesterday at that congressional hearing.
You know, Kathy Hochul, in that she talked about how the state, you know, will work with ICE in certain situations. I mean... To this point, I just don't understand, Carl, how anyone can believe that when they see the proof of what, you know, what has happened in New York State with illegals.
You can't have it both ways. You can't proclaim this a sanctuary state and New York City a sanctuary city, but say, oh, we're fully cooperating with ICE. The two are absolutely contradictory. And this state has proven that it is a sanctuary state and is not going to do anything to lift a finger to assist the feds in finding these people and deporting these people. And, you know, they talk one game and then they do something else. Actions always speak louder than words. The Democrats always like to sound like Republicans when they're running for office. And yet when they get into office, they become progressive leftists. And I think we saw part of that yesterday with Kathy Hochul proclaiming how supportive she is with ICE. But we know what the real policies are in this state and how she reacts to situations where cooperation would be needed. She doesn't. That's the problem.
Talking about the election, I've been saying this all week. You know, right before Election Day in November, Kamala Harris, all of a sudden, she cared about the border. You know, it was in her commercials talking about strength and strong borders. And now I think we would see what would have happened if Kamala Harris was elected. I mean, it's one thing up to Election Day, and now it's back to the same talking points that we had for, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it should be no surprise. This is, you know, Democrats, as I said, like to sound like Republicans when they're running for office, and then they govern from the left when they achieve office. And that's going to continue. It's been a fairly successful playbook for them over the years. But I think people have finally caught up with the game. And boy, I'll tell you, I keep following the prospects of the Democrat Party with public opinion. And just when you think it couldn't sink any lower, another poll comes out that shows that it indeed has sunk lower. And as long as they continue to support illegals, to support violence, to try to cover up violence, continue to pick the 20% of the 80-20 issues, they're going to continue to fall. And they've learned nothing. And so that goes for the media as well. I mean, you would think the media would have learned from the summer of 2020, the BLM summer. They shouldn't say it's mostly peaceful or any variation of those words, and yet they're still doing it. They're still doing it. You know, it takes, you got to listen closely, but I mean, they describe what everyone sees as chaos, they say are demonstrations. What everyone sees as arsonists, they say are anti-ICE protesters. What everyone sees as just anarchy, they say they're lawful protests with some unrest. I mean, you know, even the mayor of Los Angeles says things in L.A. are calm. Well, you know, American people are seeing exactly the opposite. And yet the media and Democrats continue to try to tell us, don't believe what your eyes see and your ears hear. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. They continue to do that. They continue to fall in the eyes of the public. They continue to lose voters. They continue to lose new voters in terms of registration and party affiliation. But, you know, one of these days they're going to wake up. Everything swings different. You know, pendulum always swings in politics. And one of these days they will wake up. But for the short term anyways, I don't see it.
You know, that display yesterday, Senator Alex Padilla barging in to Kristi Noem's press conference, and then the coordinated responses by everyone on the political left. And like you said, Carl, I think a majority of Americans look at that and go, well, what did you think was going to happen?
Well, Joe, I mean, here's a guy. He's a new senator. He's only been in office since late January. Okay, he's a freshman senator. He's a low key guy to begin with. So nobody really knows who he is. To add to that, he shows up in street clothes, jeans, sneakers, windbreaker, and no senator identification, no badge, no lanyard, nothing like that. And then he starts to rush the podium where a cabinet speaker is speaking. And he's shouting. When police try to stop him, he starts pushing back. You know, and it was obvious if you watch that, he wants to get to that podium. Now, these law enforcement officers, they don't know who this guy is. We live in dangerous times. There's been two attempts on the president's life. Now some guy is rushing and the podium to get to a cabinet secretary and yelling, and now starts pushing back on police officers. I'll tell you, anybody who does that, you, me, or anybody listening to this, you start acting like that in public and then start resisting police and pushing back, guaranteed you're going to be wearing handcuffs. Guaranteed. Because cops don't want to get hurt either. And so the first thing they need to do is make sure you are incapable of hurting the target you were going after and them. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. But then all of the Democrats in unison, starting with Chuck Schumer, this is terrible. This is more evidence of Trump coming after us. They're going to arrest all of us. And I mean, it's a bizarre response because, as you said, Joe, people watch that and they said, this guy's supposed to be a U.S. senator acting like this? I tell you, it's like just when you think Trump derangement syndrome couldn't get any more jaw-dropping, we saw it yesterday with Senator Padilla.
And I think we'll see it on display tomorrow, and Carl.
And one other thing. I noticed there was one of the press conferences had 10 or 12 of the most far-left progressive Democrats in the House, giving, you know, the usual Trump's a Nazi, he's going to take over America and all this stuff. And guess who was standing with him? Our own Tim Kennedy.
Of course. Well, they told him to be there and be there and read this. And, you know, he followed suit.
Really?
Carl, coast to coast tomorrow, we're having the No King protest. We're having several here, one downtown, one in Williamsville, the Tonawandas. I mean, you talk about TDS. When I see these things, and I should be more fair to the people who are going, but to me, I just see as I didn't get my way in November and I'm still upset about it.
Oh, that's exactly what it is. You know, let's go back to 2016 and remember all of the protests that occurred across the country when Trump got elected. Oh, there were so many. There's so many different themes. You know, women with the funny hats and, you know, I can't even recall all of the different themes. But there had to be at least a half a dozen different protest themes in those protests. Now, what did they accomplish? did not change one policy from Donald Trump's administration. He didn't respond to it in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, it just puts that image out of the Democrats being the party associated with disorder, chaos, lawlessness, riots, protests, violence. And, you know, what we're seeing now is a coordinated effort. There's no question about it. You saw the news the other night where a van pulls up and it starts distributing face shields out of boxes. I mean, that doesn't happen by accident. Somebody paid for that. Somebody directed that van to that protest. I've seen videos of people on television saying they were paid $100 to $200 a day to protest. So this is an organized effort. It's getting more and more violent. You see the images of these guys with sledgehammers breaking up curbs so they can throw the concrete chips at police officers. They throw frozen water bottles at officers. I think, Joe, their ultimate goal is they're looking for violence to produce another George Floyd. That they can all rally around and create the same kind of atmosphere and demonstrations you saw in the summer of 2020. I hope it doesn't get to that level, but I think that's their ultimate goal. They want another George Floyd summer.
Carl, Israel strikes Iran last night. I was saying it was another this whole week. I was planning to go to bed early, bank all the sleep with filling in for David and for Tom. And instead, you had the LA protest. And then now, last night, this kept me up. Your thoughts on the action itself and the response from the administration?
You know, you have to just shake your head in amazement and admiration for Israel. You had to do it when they sabotaged all of those pagers with Hamas leadership, which then blew up in people's pockets. And now you see, they pretty much took out the Iranian air defenses in their last major strike. So they just about have complete air dominance. So I think what you're seeing now is the Israelis going after what little remains of that air defense system, plus going after the missiles that could be launched at Israel and cause mass casualties. And then once you clear the skies and you clear the retaliatory threat, now it's open game, open field on these nuclear facilities, which they're already hitting. I think it's going to be a while. I think Trump was quite clear that he gave them 60 days, the Iranians, he gave 60 days to make a deal. Well, it's 61 days yesterday, and you saw what happened. I always thought, Joe, that we weren't going to do it, but we're going to tell the Israelis, go ahead, now you can. And I think that's when we reached 61 days, and the Iranians not only didn't sign a deal, but their rhetoric got even more belligerent about their intention of making nuclear bombs. I'm hearing and reading that the Iranians may have very well been within 30 days of producing upwards of 9 atomic weapons. You know Israel is not going to sit by and wait for that to happen. They can't. They can't afford it. And so, you know, they did what Israel has always done. They've protected their self-interest. They protected their own survival. And this is going to continue. But just an incredible military response. I think it's also evident that they've got support. Intelligence assets within the Iranian government and culture that's helping them identify where the leadership is at any given time. That's quite obvious. And the other thing I question, Joe, is, you know, the conventional wisdom in the media and the press is that Israel needs our bunker-busting bombs to get to these underground facilities. I really question that, that Israel, which has always taken its own national defense very seriously and has always been cognizant of not being reliant on another power for its survival. And knowing that you had to have these kinds of weapons to get to these underground facilities over many years, and that the only country up to this point has been the United States that possesses those weapons, I can't believe they just sat by and said, well, we got to hope America gives us those bombs. I think they produced them, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if in the coming weeks we hear that they're dropping their own version of bunker-busting bombs and getting into these underground facilities.
Oh, yeah. More to come of that. Carl, as we bring it back here to Buffalo, at 12 o'clock, Garnell Whitfield joined me to talk about his campaign. Early voting starts tomorrow. You know, obviously, a lot of this Buffalo mayoral talk is around Scanlon and around Sean Ryan. But do you think that the setting is there for a potential upset in this primary?
No. No, I don't. I think the two main players are Scanlon and Ryan, and that's where the contest is going to be. I think the other three challengers, the one that has raised the most money is Garnell Whitfield. He's ahead of Rashid Wyatt, which kind of surprises me a little bit. But Rashid Wyatt's advantage is that he's got a base. He's got a council district that he's represented for some time now. He's got people that have volunteered for him, that have voted for him. And I think he's got his base of support, which probably costs Ryan those votes if Wyatt was not in the race. But no, this is going to be a two-person race.
You know, looking at the general election, the Republicans are running James Gardner for the first time in a decade. They have someone on the ballot. Do you think, if you're in the city of Buffalo, a Republican, a right of center-minded person, is that the right way to go? Or do you leave it empty and try to support someone? Because a lot of these candidates in the primary are going to run in the general on a different line.
You know, you can't build a party, Joe, without running candidates. Okay, so every cycle that the Republican Party does not field candidates for mayor or council or any other citywide position, it's another year where the party doesn't begin any type of comeback at all. So if you're serious about rebuilding a party in the city, you've got to run candidates, and especially for mayor, because it's such a high profile position. It's a heavy lift. There's no question about it. But again, you know, across the country, more and more people are leaving the Democrat Party, minorities, young people. But it's not happening here. And I think part of the reason is because the Republican Party has not exploited those issues that are causing that exodus from the Democrat Party. If I was advising a Republican mayoral candidate for the city of Buffalo, I would concentrate on just overall economic situation of Buffalo. There are many other Rust Belt cities like Buffalo that are far outpacing us with economic growth and jobs. I would concentrate on crime. I've heard some real, these are anecdotal, but I've heard some real horror stories recently from Buffalo residents about crime in their neighborhoods. And I would concentrate on schools and school choice, especially with minorities. Nationwide, this has proven to be a very popular issue with minority voters, of giving them the choice to send their kids to a school that actually produces a student who can read, write, and do arithmetic. And I would concentrate on those three issues and see what happens. So you got to start somewhere. And I think you start A, by running a candidate, B, picking the right issues. And in my opinion, those three would be a good start in making headway with voters.
I mean, I know we're talking mayor, but if you look in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, I mean, he's sitting in that seat because he focused on schools.
No question. That was his. That's what delivered his race at the end. He was trailing in that race all throughout the summer and early fall. And then when Terry McAuliffe made that mistake at a debate saying parents have no say in their education of their kids, it's up to teachers and administrators, that was the turning point in that race. Youngkin picked that up and ran it home to a victory.
Yesterday, Carl, I was in for Tom, and I was talking about this graph. It shows the diversity of thought between the political left and the political right. And to me, it wasn't surprising that the political right has a wider diversity than the political left. I put this on my social media, and every liberal I went to high school with that hasn't talked to me in 20 years came out of the woodwork and was commenting on this. That's not right. How could you say that? Obviously, this is fake news. But Carl, I look at that. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious when you follow politics like we do.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, the diversity of opinions on the left is very narrow, because if you stray from the orthodoxy, if you stray from the progressive left conventional wisdom, you not only get hammered, you get destroyed. You can't question the basic tenets of progressive leftism anymore. You know, that men are men and women are women, that people should be allowed to keep more of their hard-earned money, that we should have a strong national defense, that criminals should be locked up. You know, you can't question those things without really having the wrath of the left come down on you. And so consequently, people just, for the most part, either adopt those positions in their heads and hearts, or they just shut up. They just don't say anything for fear of alienating the left. But there's no question about it. The left is committed to an orthodoxy, and they use whatever tool they can to promote it, including censorship. We saw that in the Biden administration, even going back to the Obama administration with Lois Lerner at the IRS trying to shut down conservative organizations from participating in the election. And then you had Biden with his attempts to get social media to censor conservative thought. So, you know, everything the left accuses Republicans and conservatives of doing, they do themselves and have been doing for a while.
Carl Calabrese, you hear him every Friday at 1 o'clock. Carl, these last 2 weeks have been great. I always look forward to talking to you.
Same here, Joe. Have a great weekend.
And that was Carl Calabrese. And that is Hardline for this Father's Day, Sunday, June 15th, 2025. My thanks to Dave Leventhal, Garnell Whitfield, Avi Israel, Chris Collins, and Carl Calabrese. If you missed any of the show, you can find it on demand at WBEN.com and on the Odyssey app. I'll be back here tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. as I continue to fill in for Tom Bowerly. Hope you have a great Sunday. Happy Father's Day. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 2 on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.